I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is housegrown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for coming back and joining us. I'm really happy to be back. Sorry I missed Monday. I was traveling back from Texas. I was out there visiting some family, and I also went to the Houston Freethinkers event, the For the Community 12, which was really cool. If you guys were following the Anti-Media on Facebook on Saturday night, you know, we had some awesome videos that I posted live from the event, including a spoken word piece by a group called Low Life that was really, really good, I thought. And, you know, we featured a few spoken word artists here on the Anti-Media Radio, and we've had a pretty good reception. And so, you know, I figured, why not? Let's live stream it. Got like 15,000 views, so that was pretty cool. Great event. I got to meet a lot of people, a lot of prominent activists and media people, and a bunch of great musicians and artists out there in Houston. It was really a great time, and also spent some time in San Antonio and hung out with some, got to see my mom and stuff. Anyway, long story short, that's why we didn't do the show Monday night, because I was flying back home to get back here, to get back to the Anti-Media office and get back to work. That being said, there is a lot of shit going on tonight. I don't know if we're going to be taking callers. I'm still working out. We got a new, I had to update my Skype, and I'm still working out how to get callers on the show, so I'm not sure if that's going to happen tonight, but we're going to be testing that and seeing if we can get it working. Hopefully by next week we'll have that up and going. But other than that, there's a lot of stuff to go over, because there's just still the fallout from the election, and we're going to be talking about this war on independent media going on, which is really frightening and concerning, but also pretty telling, and you know, there's a lot of stuff to be taken away from that. That being said, let me introduce my panel tonight. We've got my longtime co-host on the line, DB Schwartz. What's up, man?
Hey, I was just kind of waiting for a day like today where there'd be the backlash against the supposed reason that Hillary was not coronated, and it's going to be a fun war in the media, I see.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. I mean, I was seeing you know, right after the election, there was a bunch of people that were saying, oh, Facebook is the reason Hillary Clinton lost, and blah, blah. I'm so sick and tired of people talking about why Hillary Clinton lost without talking about the fact that Hillary Clinton is why Hillary Clinton lost. I mean, to me, it's just ridiculous. And if anybody wants to lay the blame on anyone other than Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party, you know, it's I just can't see it. I really can't. It's just ridiculous to think that any other reason other than the awful candidate, Hillary Clinton, no one else is to blame, as far as I can tell. I mean, it's just, you know, a complete shit show of excuse making. And in fact, Jake Anderson has a great article on the anti-media that came out yesterday about some of this blame game that's going around. Jake, what's up, man?
Hey, not much.
You hanging in there or what?
Yeah, I just wrote something about this bullshit, the fake news thing. I'm still trying to come up with some clever clever ways to refer to fake news sites talking about fake news sites. But yeah, you should be seeing that one soon. But yeah, the one from yesterday was, I mean, I'm late on the game for that one. I mean, a ton of people have written about the different scapegoats, but the point of it was really not so much that the point of it was not who is to blame. The point was that no one was to blame. The system worked exactly how it was supposed to work. This is the system. So you know, for so many years, if you've been on kind of the more revolutionary side, saying, you know, we gotta tear this thing down and rebuild, the irrevocable answer you're going to get to that is, no, you need to change the system from the inside. Well, now you're seeing these, you know, apocalyptic liberals who are saying, oh my God, what has happened? The Electoral College has stolen this from us. Russia has stolen this from us. WikiLeaks stole it from us. Well, you know, no, this is exactly, everything went to the letter of the law. This was a absolutely flawless, besides the pollsters getting everything wrong and not listening to half the population.
And the pundits. And you know what? Some of us were pretty much, you know, some of the people on the anti-media definitely predicted this correctly, that Trump was going to be the wind up being the winner of the election. I for sure was, at least for the majority of the election, especially seeing gaffe after gaffe by Trump, I was under the impression that this thing was going to just go to Hillary Clinton and was going to be pretty much uncontested. Now, I started changing it up a little bit after the second FBI investigation was opened, or when the FBI investigation was reopened. I started saying, you know what, maybe Trump could win. But I had it wrong too, you know, and, you know, a lot of people got it wrong.
Right. Well, you know, when it comes down to it, it's, you know, people have to start being consistent in terms of what they want. You know, the harder pill for a lot of people to swallow right now, and again, this is talking about Clinton supporters. There's a lot of Trump supporters out there, and I haven't gotten around to this yet, but Nick, on my way back from the airport, I had a Lyft driver who was a pro-Trump, non-documented Syrian Christian, who he started the conversation, came right out and said, you know, I'm so happy about Trump winning. And it was, you know, obviously it came down to him not, you know, being pissed off at Clinton and Obama for, you know, supporting the rebels that kill his friends, is his Christian friends and whatnot. And, you know, so there's a lot of people out there that they really legitimately wanted to drain the swamp. Now, I'm not a Trump supporter. I definitely didn't want Trump in the White House. But the system worked just fine. So, you know, for so many years, these people have been, you know, condescending to, I guess I'm sort of an accelerationist, a reformer, you know, fast-tracking the train wreck or whatnot. But they've been calling that childish and immature. Well, now the tables have turned, you know, and supporters of the establishment, you rejected calls for dramatic change, our political revolution. Change the system from within, that's what you said. Well, now I can say the same thing to you. If this result is so absolutely intolerable to you, change the system from within, That is, if you think that can still happen, and whether that's even worth happening. That's the question they have to answer now.
One thing to me that really is telling this election is just, and you know, I've been making comments about this for a long time, whether it's through my writings here on the radio show and my personal social media, you know, posts and stuff, is the fact that these partisan people are, they lack principles, right? And, you know, I've only been doing this political stuff for so long. I mean, I obviously couldn't stand Bush, but I wasn't involved in this stuff during that time, but I got involved during the Obama years. And, you know, I know when Obama got elected, there was this huge anti-war movement that at least, you know, seemed like it was an anti-war movement that was propelling Obama, right? And it was like, you know, backlash against the Iraq war and all this protracted, these protracted wars going on overseas in Afghanistan and all the spending and all the people dying and all the Iraqis getting killed. And, you know, Obama gets elected and then he starts up like, you know, 8 new wars or something like that. And where are these people? Where in the hell have they been this whole time? I haven't seen them. In fact, when we did that anti-war movement back in 2013, which was the last time the anti-war movement really showed its face, there was actually Tea Party people out there protesting against the war in Syria, believe it or not. You know, and so I wouldn't say they were the majority or anything like that, but the Obama Democrats were not there. And now, again, going looking at first the election, Trump wins as a Republican who's supposedly the party of family values. I mean, he's over here talking about grabbing women by the pussy. He's, you know, got how many different wives, how many different kids with different women, talking about cheating on his wife, has just been horribly indecent in many ways. And so all those values went out the window with the Republicans now that they support Trump. I mean, that's gone. And now you got these Democrats, many Democrats, who are like saying, oh, the system's not rigged. There's nothing wrong with it. It's fine how it is. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, we need to ban the Electoral College. This is not working out. It's like, wait, are you saying the system is rigged or are you not? You know, and you know, and so there's like zero principles within these partisans. And that really pisses me off. But, you know, if people just had principles, I think we'd be in a lot less of this big mess that we're in right now. But you know what? That's just not a reality. People don't have principles. And I don't know. Maybe they never will. You know, but I'd like to you know, consider myself a person with principle, and that's why I didn't vote in this election, because none of these candidates represented me. And if there was a candidate running that was going to say, look, here's my plan, I'm going to not impose my beliefs on everybody, and in fact I'm going to roll back all these impositions of beliefs on everybody, maybe that's a guy I would vote for. But at this point, you know, political parties gain followers and win by promising to impose their beliefs on other people, pretty much. And as long as one group of people can overpower the other in the voting box, well then their opinions get, you know, forced on other people. And that to me is just, it's so flawed. It's so flawed. And the way that Trump, go ahead.
I was just going to say, while you segue into Trump, the way that Trump uses it is he'll promise his voters something and then turn around on the world stage and use those promises as threats to get what he wants, to enrich himself. And, you know, hopefully in the side process, America gets a little bit brighter economically, but we cannot hope for that. And that's really all it is.
Yeah, and, you know, the way Trump came into power, it's so Shakespearean in his kind of Julius Caesar type of way of assuming power, with, you know, just appealing emotionally with great rhetoric and stuff that is, you know, in my opinion, his rhetoric is all misleading and false, because Trump is not going to fix the economy by deporting immigrants and banning Muslims, and it's not going to keep us safe. In fact, his anti-Islam rhetoric is going to inspire a lot more terrorism. I mean, Trump is going to be, when all is said and done, Trump is going to be the president who has presided over the most homegrown terrorism that has ever happened in the United States. And that's a frightening prospect, because every act that happens, they're going to tighten down the vice grip even more around the necks of the average citizens, and especially Muslim Americans, and more attacks are going to happen. And, you know, it's kind of an expected thing. I mean, the more you alienate a group of people, the more they're going to lash back out at you. And that's what's going to happen under Trump. You know, it's just that's the way it's going to be. And it's unfortunate that it's going to be that way. But, you know, we're going to witness under Trump probably a huge rise in homegrown terrorism and also a huge backlash against Muslim Americans. And it's not going to be pretty. It's really not going to be pretty.
It's already starting up here, Nick. Yesterday, we had a student that was assaulted, I guess, whatever happened, and it's happening with the youth especially. So, I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen up here. We have a huge Muslim population, and, I mean, you can already see the cracks starting to split, because what they'll do is they'll mass certain communities in other communities seemingly randomly, like Dearborn with Detroit and Michigan, and they'll just wedge people. I mean, here you have all Somalian and all Hmong. And then they're all pocketed in certain areas. So, you know, once anything happens with the societal breakdown, those places become like literal no-go zones. They're kind of crazy.
Yeah, and, you know, Trump, one of his advisors already said they're working on a type of Muslim registry. Now, I think it's supposedly only for foreign Muslims that are coming to visit. But, you know, Trump during the campaign talked about putting extra law enforcement into Muslim communities, spying on mosques and stuff like that. I mean, if Trump has his way, I mean, they're going to turn Muslim communities into ghettos, you know, and that's what they may end up doing, because it's going to be just a vicious cycle of homegrown extremism due to alienation, more alienation, you know, more homegrown extremism. It's just going to be a bad cycle, you know, and hopefully people don't buy into this crap, but, you know, it's just going to be something that we're going to have to keep a close eye on, because, you know, people are going to want to give away their freedom as soon as they feel afraid. And Trump has made his entire political career out of capitalizing on people being afraid, you know. And so when things happen, he's going to capitalize on it. And you thought Obama's gun-grabbing rhetoric was bad after Sandy Hook and all that stuff. I mean, Trump is going to make that stuff look like nothing. Because he's unashamed and, you know, not even having to hide it. And his supporters love that stuff, you know. And I could definitely see Trump supporters saying, yeah, you know what, like, let's take away the guns, but only for the Muslims and stuff. Like, they would be okay with that, as much as these guys supposedly love gun rights. As I mentioned earlier, they have no principles. These partisans have no principles. So if it's like, okay, well, we're going to restrict gun rights, but only for Muslims and only for Mexicans, then his supporters would be like, oh, yeah, that sounds okay then, as long as you don't mess with our gun. And looking historically, I mean, that's been done before. In fact, I read that the NRA back, I think it was like in the 60s, initially was like a supporter of gun control because they were trying to disarm the Black Liberation Movement, you know, and the Black Panthers and stuff. And so, you know, back then, the NRA was trying to get gun control. You know, and so I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of thing happened again. That being said, let me bring on one of our awesome editors over at Underground Reporter, Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire? Are you joining us?
Yes. What's up?
Hanging in there. It's nice seeing you out in Houston. We got to hang out for a little bit and enjoy the awesome festival that Derek puts on. Anyone listening tonight, I encourage you to get out there. I mean, it's the For the Community event. It goes on twice a year. If you have a chance, get out there. You won't regret it. You'll meet a bunch of amazing, open-minded people, and you can have great conversations. Really a refreshing event, you know, and that's really the least I can say about it. It's just really refreshing to go out there and experience it. Anyway, Claire, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty well. Quite livid, actually. This whole fake news, the war on quote-unquote fake news that's going on now, is a very thinly disguised war on alternative media and dissenting opinion. And that's worrisome, and it should bother everybody, not just the people who are actually in that industry.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the main topic tonight, and it's so huge because I know sooner or later we're going to be affected by it, and everybody's going to be affected by this because it really has the potential to stifle political discussion or, you know, any kind of discussion, because, you know, we can, if we rely on these internet gatekeepers, as I like to call them, and I've heard them referred to by several philosophers, that, you know, back in the day, you know, television was like the gatekeeper, because the only way you can get on television was to have like a multi-million-dollar media conglomerate to buy the airtime, you know, and the internet really rearranged all that, decentralized and democratized information. And now we're dealing with this new era of gatekeepers, which would be someone like Google, YouTube, Facebook, you know, Twitter to a lesser extent. And now they have the power to be the gatekeepers. And that kind of seems like what's going on right now. And, you know, Claire, do you think this is kind of a pushback from the failed Hillary Clinton presidency? Because immediately after the election, I saw a lot of articles blaming Facebook for Hillary Clinton losing. I mean, do you think that this is what it's about?
That's exactly what this is about, actually. There is very strong evidence that this is a campaign run by the establishment. I mean, for one thing, you have Media Matters running the main petition to basically excoriate Facebook for not eliminating fake news. The thing that's really kind of ironic and hysterical about that is that when this call about fake news first started surfacing, Mark Zuckerberg himself was like, what are you talking about? You know, there's basically no, how could a few fake news articles possibly have swayed this election? That's just basically, it's utter bullshit. What are you talking about? And then suddenly, when you have these strong establishment-tied organizations getting behind this thing about fake news, must have swayed the election, suddenly Zuckerberg changes his tune and says, well, I guess we're going to address this quote-unquote problem. And he has undertaken steps to actually eliminate fake news from Facebook. And the problem with that, well, there are countless problems with that, innumerable problems with that. But one of the biggest problems with that is that he has decided that he's going to use artificial intelligence bots to assist in this effort. Because obviously when you have a platform with a following of over 1 billion people, it's going to require a Herculean effort. And one of the events he sponsored, like a hackathon event that he sponsored to get people involved in this and try to figure out how to eliminate this quote-unquote fake news non-problem, they employed some college students who had this kind of oddly boastful idea that they'd eliminated the problem in 36 hours because they made an extension for Google Chrome that would eliminate fake news by verifying or not verifying certain articles. The problem with this is, one of the articles that was highlighted that they found that was not verified, like it was unable to be verified, the language in that article is actually language taken from a government agency news site. Like, it's actual government language about cannabis killing cancer cells. It's a government article, and they're saying that was fake news. So you can see from the start where this is flawed. There is no way that this can possibly go well. And it's a very poorly disguised attempt to eliminate dissenting opinion.
It's so blatant.
One thing that really, and for me, you know, I definitely see both sides of this, because nothing pisses me off more to see people that I respect online sharing news articles from Your News Wire or Veterans Today, or one of these, like, purely fictional, I wouldn't even call them news outlets. To me, it's, like, entertaining, because you read it, and it's, like, a bad episode of some, like, MacGyver show or something. It's like, you know, oh, our source tells us this, but he's, you know, it's just, like, there's so many, there are really bad news, fake news outlets out there. And so on one hand, I'm like, I wish people would stop sharing this crap fake news. On the other hand, I'm like, I don't think Facebook should be the gatekeeper of what should be defined as truthful or untruthful. I mean, the thing
nobody
is,
nobody should, though.
Yeah, exactly. People say shitty things. That doesn't mean you stop them from saying them. That's free speech.
Exactly. Not only that, but we have, I mean, the whole point of this and the whole problem with this is that we have the internet at our fingertips. Every single one of us has the ability to research these articles and to find out what's true and what's not. It's the responsibility of people and the irresponsibility of people who share articles without investigating further. It's not the responsibility of any gatekeeper whatsoever to determine who should and who should not be deemed fake news. It's the responsibility of people to investigate and to ensure that what they're sharing is not fake. Even if it requires sharing the headline, you know, sharing the article and saying, hey, does anybody know anything about this? Instead of just blindly sharing stuff and, like, having, I mean, the repercussions of a very few outlets being completely fake news sources will come down as a blanket and total and utter censorship program by the state.
Completely agree with you.
This fake news list that went around by one arbitrary professor who compiled this list with nothing whatsoever to back it up, I am sorry, but talk about irresponsible journalism and proving her own damn point. This person shared this list, and she assumes that her word should be steel truth above everything else. She has nothing to back it up. She has no claims of why she believed that the different sites that she listed should be this, that, and the other thing. There is no reason to believe that list.
How was she even given so much power? Why do they care? Why is she in charge of this?
This person is an assistant professor. It's not even a legit professor. And secondly, it also, to me, it shows one of the big problems with mainstream media, because this list was shared. It was written about by the New York Times, I believe, the New York Post,
Business Insider, Independent, all sorts of places.
Several very mainstream news outlets, but it kind of is indicative of the AP style newswire stuff, where it's just like, okay, let's take what someone said and let's repeat it over and over and pretend it's completely true.
They're proving their own points. That's the irony of this. They're proving their own point about fake news by sharing this fake article. You're talking about one person's opinion that's not presented as opinion. It's presented as truth. And all of these mainstream outlets, the ones who proved themselves faulty to begin with, have taken this and run with it and proven the fake news narrative from the start. The problem is the implications and the repercussions come down on everybody else. Not only were sites listed that were perfectly legitimate, but they were dissenting on one side or the other. And then you also have sites that were presented like kind of almost as a Trojan horse, the sites that had sided with Bernie Sanders over Hillary Clinton as being fake news. Consider the implications of that.
Yeah, I noticed that. I noticed U.S. Uncut was added on there, and the other 98%, both of which were pro-Bernie Sanders outlets, and both of which, who I know the people running it and I am in regular communication with, several of our friendly websites were on there, which do not post solely misleading content. And it was, it really is, it comes down to this war, I think, and it's the corporate media really in danger, I think, at this point, because they put all of their resources, and we talked about this, and this is one of the reasons why I thought Hillary Clinton was going to win, because I underestimated the power of independent media, and even as a huge major integral part of it, I underestimated the influence that we're able to wield over here. But, you know, after the entire institution of U.S. mainstream media got behind Hillary Clinton, and she still lost, they're all freaking out. Right, because this is probably the first time this has ever happened to them. Because last time around with Mitt Romney, it happened earlier on too in the presidential primaries, where Bernie Sanders almost came and beat Hillary Clinton. The media now, especially with the WikiLeaks and stuff, we saw how the media colluded like crazily to the point where Hillary Clinton was being fed entire debate questions ahead of time so that she could beat Bernie Sanders in the debates, because the media was trying to get her elected. Now, for the first time, the media got behind a candidate like they did behind Obama in 2008 and 2012, and that candidate didn't win. And so the mainstream media is freaking out. They're like, holy shit, we're powerless now. Like, we have no more influence. Like, what are we going to do? Well, we have to get rid of the competition. Who is the competition? Well, it's us. It's the independent media people. And sure, there are some shitty websites mixed in with the independent media. In fact, I would argue in some ways the majority of them are shitty in their own way. But that does not mean that we need to go around and say, okay, we're going to ban fake news from our website. And the other thing, and this is probably what is going, if Facebook ends up doing some reforms, it'll probably be a combination of bots, AI, and it'll be using the flagging system that they already have in place for flagging spam posts and stuff, which is completely flawed, by the way. I mean, I get banned all the time. I have 4 different Facebook profiles because my accounts get banned just for posting controversial information. I mean, you're not supposed to post nudity. You're not supposed to post hate speech or promoting acts of violence. Never done that. I've never done that in my entire time working online, yet I've been banned probably 200 times on Facebook or more. So their flagging system, if they're going to wind up going with down that route for, you know, flagging down fake news and getting it removed off the website, you know, that is a horrible, horrible system as it is. I mean, Facebook's flagging system has been an issue of great contempt for a long time. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know that run Facebook pages that are completely fed up with Facebook's policies on banning people, removing content. I mean, our content gets removed all the time. And it almost never violates Facebook guidelines. So, you know, that the whole system is completely flawed. And all we're going to see now is more and more of, it's going to be more and more of this self-censorship, really, I think, where it's like, oh, well, this, I disagree with the opinion in this article, therefore I'm going to flag it as fake news because I disagree. Even if it's factual, even if it's just, you know, someone's opinion based on factual events or factual documentation, it's like, I disagree, so this needs to be removed from Facebook. That's exactly what's going to happen.
That's the perilous course we're on. I mean, this is an indication that alternative and independent media won the media wars. We won this because we had integrity throughout the election cycle. And everybody saw through the mainstream media's bullshit. I mean, they really did. We've proved our worth. And this is the only way that the mainstream has left to lash out. Is like, hey, you must be fake because you disagree with our narrative. I mean, that's essentially what's going on here. There's one redeeming sort of quality here where I've seen some of the Facebook pages of the mainstream outlets that have posted this crap list. A lot of the comments are like, okay, so when are you going to list yourself for telling lies? Right. You know, they're like excoriating mainstream media for this instead, which is a wonderful, it's a wonderful show of support for alternative media. So I will say that.
I mean, how many times does CNN need to get caught faking stuff before people are like, okay, CNN's fake? I mean, the other thing here to keep in mind is that the overall trust in mainstream media has been plummeting for a long time. You know, and thanks to the internet and, like I said, the democratization of information, I mean, people are able to go through and kind of deconstruct mainstream narratives and deconstruct war propaganda and stuff like that. Sometimes more effectively than others, but you know, these sites are becoming so irrelevant that they're really just lashing out here. And I kept seeing so many post after post after post from the mainstream liberal media about how Facebook was to blame. Facebook was the reason. Fake news stories were the reason Hillary Clinton lost. Like, you guys are still not getting it. First of all, people don't trust Hillary Clinton. And the only thing trusted less than Hillary Clinton at this point is the mainstream media, you know, we're really dealing with a changing, just a changing landscape here. And Claire, you said that independent media won the war. I wouldn't call it the war, but definitely the battle. And now the next battle is what we're facing right now is with, you know, whether Facebook is going to censor independent media or not. And I mean, it already happens. As I mentioned, I've been banned 200, 300 times. I don't know how many. I lost track. You know, so it's already happening, but is it going to happen at a greater pace? And if so, what is the reaction going to be? I mean, are people going to start finally actually legitimately leaving Facebook? Because there are plenty of alternatives out there. But if the crackdown happens, what do we do? You know?
Well, this is the thing. We really need somebody with an anti-censorship activist mind to come forward and create a platform that all but usurps the copyright of Facebook, because you are not going to get another, you will not get the vast masses to follow to another platform until it mimics Facebook sufficiently without violating the copyright. And I've said this time and time again, I'm about ready to try to do it my damn self, even though I have like no technological expertise whatsoever. I mean, we are at the point where we are playing games with this platform in order to make truth and information heard. And that is absurd. In 2016, that is absurd. We are literally regressing back into some sort of statist fascist regime here. Censorship in any form cannot be tolerated. And that's my issue with this list. And it's my huge issue with people that I respect sharing this list. It's as if they said, well, here's something that you should consider. And they're not considering the implications. They're not considering all of the repercussions. They're not considering who's listed, who is not listed. They're not considering what it means for the future in terms of censorship by the state. And they're not considering the fact that there are reasons for those who were omitted and reasons for those who were included. This is where we're headed. In the context of a culture war, which we have now entered, people are not considering the bigger picture in a number of areas. They're not considering the bigger picture in protests. They're not considering the bigger picture in censorship. They've just given up. It's like things have gotten so chaotic, people have decided that they have a singular focus, and that's it, and that's all that matters, and that is bullshit, and it is going to drive us right into the agenda of the establishment. Once again, it worries me, it concerns me, and the parallels with history are not to be ignored.
Now, everybody was concerned, I made a post about this earlier on my own Facebook page, everyone was concerned that Trump was going to come in and crack down on the First Amendment. Now, I think he still will. I think he will. But this attack coming right now on the First Amendment is coming from the Hillary Clinton left, or what's left of it. And that to me is what's really concerning, is that we're about to be under relentless attack from the left and the right, with Trump and with the Hillary Clinton-backed media.
Consider this. I'm sorry to interrupt, but consider this. Hillary Clinton, like the losing Hillary Clinton campaign with the backing of the Obama administration, sets up this narrative that there is fake news, sets up this narrative where censorship is just fine. Just like Obama having, you know, the ability to indefinitely detain people and drone strike anybody anywhere in the world, we're going to hand all of these tools over to Trump? This does not bode well. And nobody's considering this.
Just trust Steve Bannon. He'll do fine.
Well, that reminds me of the tweet by WikiLeaks.
What were you saying, Jake?
It reminds me of the tweet by WikiLeaks soon after the election, which was something to the effect of, remember when you made legal extrajudicial assassination, prosecuting journalists, drone striking anyone you wanted? All of that is Trump's in 71 days. So this entire infrastructure that was built and facilitated and made stronger by Obama, the most powerful surveillance infrastructure in the history of the world, is going to be under Trump's control. That is a scary thought.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's going to be, you know, a lot of the crap that Obama got away with because liberals went to sleep, like I said, after 2008.
Well, they went to sleep. They took a half a bottle of Xanax and went to sleep.
Yeah, they hibernated for 8 years, you know, and the liberal left that was supposedly opposed to wars and was opposed to the Patriot Act, and they thought that, you know, privacy was a good thing. You know, Obama takes office and they all went to sleep, and they let the hope and change just, you know, morph into despair and authoritarianism. And
you know, Obama was able to secure all these different executive powers, and now Trump's going to get them all. You know, and that's one of the ones, the one Claire mentioned, indefinite detention of U.S. citizens without trial. I mean, that's something that passed into law under the NDAA, under Obama. No one said a word about it, really, except for maybe the principled, nonpartisan people that were actually like, holy shit, this is big, we need to talk about this. But, you know, that only, you know, that's like 1% of the population, so that's not going to do much. You know, those people spoke out, but, you know, all the people that should have been, in theory, against that stuff, they're all asleep at the wheel, you know. And
yeah, and now you have this war on alternative journalism, which has already called this stuff out, which continues to call these kinds of practices out. Like, alternative journalism and dissenting opinion, these people are the exact people we need to be able to empower right now to call out what's going on, to explicitly say what it is that Obama has done, what past administrations have done that Trump is going to gain control of, and why that's a danger, and why we need to have attention called to this matter. Instead, we have the establishment backlash from Hillary's failed campaign saying, hey, all these people are fake, so don't listen to a word they say. And then we have people that we used to trust, you know, people amongst us who are sharing this list as if it's the God's honest truth. That's dangerous. This is the problem right now. This is why I'm saying there's like a culture war going on. People aren't considering all of the repercussions of what they're saying. When you share a list where, yes, there might be some valid sites listed as fake, you can't say, hey, well, it's okay because these sites kind of suck, and I always thought they sucked, so I'm going to share this list. Because you're taking sites that have valid records, whether they're clickbait or slightly biased or not, does not matter. Their message is the same. It's calling attention to these practices by the state that are inexcusable and must be called attention to, and you're calling those fake when they're perfectly legitimate concerns. We're like running headlong into this horrible collision course with reality, and it's like nobody's even paying attention. I mean, I know that Jake knows what I'm talking about. I feel like this is just perilous and absurd.
Yeah, it's really dangerous. Now, on the other hand, I think there is some things to be learned from this. Because, like I said, I looked over that list, and a lot of those sites are pretty bad. But, you know, we're in an age of this social media model where clickbait sells, you know, and I run the anti-media website. I see all the numbers and I know what gets traffic and doesn't get traffic. And, you know, we write hard hitting articles and have, you know, straightforward headlines. And for the most part, people on social media aren't trying to read that stuff, you know? And so in this new age of social media model of media business, what we're dealing with, first of all, is lazy news readers who are only going to read stuff that's clickbait, and that gives an incentive for websites to create more clickbait and less, you know, more lazy journalism. And so it really is we're at a point now where we need to look at the entire model here, because it really does incentivize clickbait. And I see, like I said, your Newswire, God, it's not even on the list, and whoever put this list together has no effing clue about what they're doing, because if they don't have your Newswire on there, they missed the biggest one. But I looked at that website's Alexa rankings the other day, and they're like in the top 1,000 websites in the world, and it literally everything they write is fiction. It's all fiction. And it's to me something that I think, first of all, people that like to consume independent media need to change their habits, because scrolling through the newsfeed and lazily clicking on clickbait is not the way to support strong independent journalism. I mean, people need to go to these news outlets' websites every day, like the anti-media, for instance. And we have been seeing a strong increase in visitors to our homepage, but we need more. It's not nearly enough. Like, if Facebook tomorrow decided, okay, you know what, the anti-media is fake news, we're not allowing them on there, we'd be out of business. We'd be done. We don't have enough people going to our website and saying, okay, I want to go see independent media today. I'm going to go to the anti-media and read their stories and see what they have to say. And I'm going to click on these hard-hitting stories, and that way they don't have to write clickbait and shit like that. And of course, I don't like writing clickbait. I make most of the titles, and I try not to write clickbait. But you know what? Like, if I don't, at least to a small degree, people don't click on it and read it, you know? And so it's a really kind of paradox that people are stuck in. I mean, independent media, independent journalists want to write hard-hitting articles. They don't want to have clickbait. But in this model of social media journalism, clickbait is the only thing that people click on, you know? And so it's a really...
In another irony, the only way to counter, you know, because I work in search engine optimization, so I'm on the opposite perspective where I'm always trying to think of organic traffic. But the only way to get organic traffic is through search engine optimization. The main, you know what happens with that? That's not an organic process either. Giant corporations control search engine optimization, and they gain the algorithm and pay companies to link build for them so that their articles rank higher. So there's no such thing as just this innocent pure internet. It's a wild west. It's just everyone trying to get clicks over everyone else. So to target the independent sites because they have to use clickbaity titles, it's just so absolutely ludicrously unfair that it's like you said, it's so difficult to explain the difference between a clickbait title that's meant to tickle your interest and one that's intellectually dishonest, you know?
Exactly.
Clickbait alone, I think that's in itself is kind of a dishonest term, exactly for what you're saying. I mean, you have to get people interested in stuff. You're talking about a populace where, and I've researched this, it's 97% of the population shares something without ever going into the article. And the people that do actually go into the article only read the first two sentences. When you're dealing with a populace that unwilling to actually grasp information or learn from information, clickbait's an absolute necessity. And it has nothing to do with the information provided. And it certainly does not make an article any less valid. If you can back it up, if there are links provided and they link to something that's legitimate, then there's no reason in the world why you should call it pure clickbait. That just, it drives me insane.
And this list of news, it was about, you know, part of it was clickbait articles. Where was BuzzFeed? I didn't see BuzzFeed on there. I didn't see Washington Post on there. Those are the
Seriously.
Two.
Was the Daily Kos on there or Breitbart? Yeah.
Breitbart was on there.
So this is the left.
Breitbart.
Breitbart. It is the left.
Oh, yeah.
Zero Hedge made it.
InfoWars. Zero
Hedge.
This is the left's last gasp at trying to hold on to their power, and the only way they can is to try to formulate a public uprising, and they're well on their way into their fifth day of protest, but they're losing steam because the people that are the circus masters are paid, and they're tired of paying these guys.
Dude, it's so ridiculous. How can there not be an organic movement for truth out there? And why is the DNC just purposely inculcating them? Are they purposely just incubating themselves in this shell? Why would they do that? Did they not see the writing on the wall? Here they thought that the GOP was self-destructing and was the exact opposite. The Democratic Party, this is the weakest they've been in they've probably never been weaker than this. And they're still here trying to pull these little games out of their asses. What are they thinking?
They're committing suicide with the announcement of Schumer. I mean, really, they're just saying we're the Republican Party now. And now it's really, honestly, if we're going to continue to play this game that's going on, we need to create an actual people's party.
Right. Well, I'll tell you one thing, man. I mean, as much as I don't like Trump, and as much as it sucks what's going on, and it sucks some of the people that are going to get on the Supreme Court, for us, for the four people talking right now, I mean, this is our compass. This is exactly what we need to be doing right now. You know, generations of kids in the future need us to be doing what we're doing right now, because there is the alt-right is about to have a freaking empire. I mean, the alt Trump is the next Reagan, as far as I'm concerned. Like, they're going to be an empire, and the Democratic Party has absolutely no there's nothing there. And like you're saying, I mean, Claire, I know you're an anarchist. Nick, I know you're an anarchist. DB, I know you side a little bit more on the left, maybe with me, but regardless of what your political preferences are now, the time for forging a new path and for turning people towards, you know, ideals outside of the system, there's never been a more verdant time for it than right now. I mean, this is the emperor wears no clothes. The system, the political system, has collapsed.
It has, and
well,
you know
said.
There's a couple things I want to comment on with Trump and the alt-right. First of all, you know, I definitely think the alt-right is going to be incubated into a slumber in some ways, very similar to the way the progressive Obama movement was after 2008. Insofar as the xenophobic attacks will be less over, you know, maybe not for these few weeks and months, but next year and the following, you know, the alt-right will lose its momentum because it's got its guy in the office already.
All it takes is one terrorist attack and it starts back up again. What are you talking about?
That's true. Now, the other thing is that Trump is surrounding himself with neocons. And so, you know, Trump was a big league lie. And, you know, he's more of the same. I mean, sure, he's rejecting some aspects of neoliberal economics, at least so far. But Trump is basically, on foreign policy, he's starting to look a lot like the fifth term of George W. Bush. And so, you know, maybe he won't go to war with Russia, but maybe he teams up with Russia to go to war with the rest of the Middle East, you know. And so, you know, Trump is nothing but more of the same on foreign policy, and who knows where in the hell the guy is going to stand on economics because he has no consistency. So, you know, everything about Trump so far has been just for his voters. I think that they're quietly starting to experience some buyer's remorse, but they won't say it publicly because they're too prideful, just like no Obama person will ever, 90% of Obama people will never criticize their emperor. And so that's, you know, you're going to experience the same thing with the Trump supporters. He doesn't repeal Obamacare. Well, then all of a sudden they're going to like Obamacare because that's just how it's going to be. Because like I said, these people have no principles. So, you know, with Trump, I mean, again, what Trump did was he absorbed this populist kind of movement. I think it was kind of unscripted, and I think it was supposed to be Hillary Clinton to take office. But regardless, Trump is now under the influence of the establishment, and he absorbed a populist movement, and he'll diffuse it, I think. And just like Obama diffused his populist movement, I mean, these figureheads, they take up revolutionary movements, and then they take all the wind out of their sails, and they return back to the status quo after like 2 years. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, that's probably where Trump is going. But that's going to lead us down to, you know, 4 years from now, and the next election happens. I can definitely see a very insurgent leftist movement that's similar to the Bernie Sanders campaign, maybe even more radical, that would really give Trump a run for his money, especially if he goes down the path of status quo establishment politics. But, you know, the country, and we talked about this last week, the country has elected two populists in a row, right? 2008, it was Obama. 2016, it's Trump. Two populists. The country is shifting in that direction. They're looking for radical change because status quo stuff has just failed us, and inequality has gotten worse. You know, income has not gone up really. The extremely rich are way more well off than they were, and the working poor are worse off than they've ever been. So the country is shifting in a direction of more radicalism. And I think what we're going to be seeing from now on, at least from what I can tell right now, is just radical left and radical right movements switching off between who's in power, who's not in power. And, you know, sooner or later, people are trying to find some kind of alternative to what we've been, you know, kind of stuck with for a long time. And you know, it's going to be a very interesting couple of next elections, and we're going to see America is trying to find itself right now because it has no effing clue what it is. United States has no clue what it is anymore because our empire is dwindling, our economy is now starting to be dwarfed by China's, our military strength is pretty much, you know, a lot of our allies are starting to reject us. We lost control of a lot of our, you know, vassal states and colonies, you know, and America is an empire in decline. The people of the republic or whatever you want to call it are really looking for something radical to latch onto that maybe can work for them. And so far they haven't gotten it. They think they're going to get that with Trump, but from what I can tell so far, more of the same, you know. And so it's going, we're in for a rough ride. We are. We're in for a real bumpy ride. And hopefully some new ideas can start coming in. And like DV was saying, you know, we need a third party, a big third party to come in and really shatter the hell out of the political process and do some real damage to them and maybe shake it up a little bit.
All these people marching should just fund all their money together and do something with it.
Massive protests in Los Angeles over the Bannon appointment.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's such a small minority. What is L.A., like 10 million people? How many people came to that, Jake?
15,000?
So.
No, I'm kidding. I was saying factually 15 people.
I mean, the media is giving a lot of attention to not a lot of people.
It's less than 1% of people, for sure.
Way less than that.
Not enough. It's not enough to do much, but hey, at least there's something.
At least they care. At least they care.
We have to also remember that we are now really an online community. Like the world has moved to the interwebs. We have. It's a lot less about being in the street and doing things. It's a lot more about doing things online and connecting with people that you have never seen face to face. I think there's a lot to be done with the people that you see online and dispelling bad information and pointing out the truth and showing what's really going on for people so that they can see the big picture.
Nick, I remember marching with you at one of those March Against Monsanto ones in San Diego when you had the headphone or the megaphone.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Man, back in my days. And you know what?
You've changed, bro. No, just kidding.
The whole March Against Monsanto, I'm not going to disregard the movement, but the people that are now running the main website and stuff, you know, they've succumbed to the clickbait misinformation stuff too, man. And, you know, it's a sad symptom to see go on, but it happens. You know, but of course there's local movements. The one here in San Diego, it's awesome movement. Local movements, you know, for food liberation. I mean, it's a noble cause. But, you know, prior to all this hysteria about fake news, every single day I go scroll through my newsfeed, I would see about 10 different people sharing bogus shit. And I would comment on it, and I just, you know, I've already got my routine down. I comment on it and I say, this is not a legit news source, and I just move on. And then most of the people that I've commented, they say, oh, crap, I didn't realize it. Thanks for letting me know. I hardly ever get people saying, getting all defensive, like, screw you, asshole, you're just, you know, whatever, whatever. Like, people legitimately, when they find out that they've accidentally shared some bogus shit, they actually are like, oh, and they take it down, they apologize, and they're like, okay, I accidentally shared something bad. We don't need some, you know, gatekeeping corporation like Facebook or Google coming around and telling us what's fake and what's not. Like,
it's one thing to have the information out there that some people think this site isn't honest. What's messed up is screwing up their monetization and algorithmic efforts. That's not for them to decide.
Yeah, it's a crazy times. Thank you all for tuning in. That's I mean the radio. Make sure you catch Jake and DP on live.
Yo, here we go through the stereo.